Cavalcade of Kings. Charles II, Part 2. On the 22nd of May, 1662, King Charles II of England married poor, plain Catherine of Braganza. The marriage was childless, and her influence on English politics negative as compared with his many mistresses, amongst whom was Nell Gwynn, pretty, witty Nell, whom Charles sincerely loved till the day he died. Nell was born in 1650 in a little cottage in Pipewall Lane, Hereford. She first sold oranges in the Theatre Royal. Later she became an actress, and one night King Charles, accompanied by the immortal Pepys, saw her. Nell had to recite an epilogue. She wore a hat of the circumference of a large coach wheel, and her little figure looked so droll that tears of laughter ran down His Majesty's face. Nell, catching sight of the King's uncontrollable mirth, saucily put her fingers to her nose at him and went on with her recitation.
Odds fish, Pepys. Did you see the saucy puss? She had the audacity to put her fingers to her nose at her king.
Nellie is no respecter of persons, sire. She's quite the most delightful young savage in London town.
I must make her acquaintance, my good Pepys. Tell me, has Nell Gwynn a lover?
That I could not say, sire.
Never mind. I shall speak to her after the performance is over.
It is an excellent play, sire.
It is indeed. The women do very well in it.
Especially Nellie, sire?
She above all others. But see, they're ringing down the curtain. It is time we left the theatre. Would you be so good as to summon my coachman and bid him attend me at the entrance to the stage?
It's useless to scold me, my Lord Buckhurst. But what care I for Charles of England? He's just the same as any other man. No better, no worse. Odds fish, this hat of mine plagues me.
Even as it becomes you mightily, Mistress Gwynn.
Who speaks? I know not the voice, and I can't see his face. Odds fish, man, why do you skulk in the shadows? Is it because there's a blight upon you?
Quiet, Nelly. Hold thy fish hands. Tell me, you address
them. Not another word, I pray thee, my Lord Buckhurst. Leave me. There's a good fellow. I would have speech alone with my lady of the coach wheel.
Come back, Lord Buckhurst. Come back, I say. Don't leave me here alone in the lane with this rapscallion. Bucky, come back. Can't you hear me shouting at you? Come back. You promised to give me a bite of supper at the Mermaid Tavern. As faith, he's disappeared round the corner as fast as his knock knees would carry him.
Most churlish of my Lord Buckhurst.
As faith, it's you who drove him away. Come out here and stand under the lantern so as I can see your face. And if I don't like it, I'll tweak your interfering nose for spoiling a good night's fun for me.
At your service, fair lady.
What fish, it's King Charles himself. Faith, I'm undone. Oh, what'll happen to me now?
I'm going to escort you to my coach.
What are you going to do with me, sire? Behead me in the tower.
No, I'm taking you home to the palace to supper.
Oh, forsooth, 'tis good news, sire. Poor Nelly could do with a good square meal. But there'll be blood and anarchy when Moll Davies hears about you entertaining Nelly Gwynn at supper.
Dismiss Moll Davies from your mind.
There's still my Lady Castlemaine. That haughty baggage will scratch out my eyes if she sees me supping at the king's table. Perhaps I'd better not go.
Will you enter my coach, or must I carry you?
Oh, please, sire. I'd like that.
Any fate, I'll do it. Come on. Oh, what a bundle of charm you are, Nelly.
Have a care of my hat. Odds fish, it won't go through the coach door.
Oh, then throw it away.
Throw away my lovely hat. Not I. Look at the ostrich feathers on it. Look at the velvet and gold laces. Throw it away. You must be a crazy loon to think of such a thing.
Oh, Nelly. You're very rude to your king.
Bah, you're no better than any other man, even though your breeches are of cloth of gold.
Oh, you're a wily young animal, but I'll tame you.
If they, you'll have a hard task, sire, for I kick, scratch, and bite like this.
Oh, you little devil.
Well, sire, do you think you'll like the task of taming Nelly Gwynn?
I'll adore it.
That was the beginning of a mutual love which lasted throughout the lifetime of Charles and Nell Gwynn. She took her place at court as the king's favorite and was loved and respected by all for her kindness and generosity and her delightful wit and wild, untamed personality. Amongst her many deeds for charity was the founding of the Royal Chelsea Hospital, an edifice which still stands today. We now find Charles in his private apartments. It is 8 o'clock in the morning, and the Earl of Clarendon has just been admitted, much to the king's annoyance.
Odds fish, Clarendon. You must have a guilty conscience that won't allow you to rest. Is it necessary that you should disturb me at this unearthly hour of the morning? Before I've even been attended by Killigrew, my barber.
The diligence of your Majesty's Chancellor should be rewarded, not reproved, sire. Moreover, England would be lost if we were all lie-abeds.
Well said, good Clarendon. In faith, you should be feeling more comfortable now that you've eased yourself with such a heavy burden. But by the same token, I'm growing weary of your pedantic bombast. It is such heavy fare to digest. Therefore, I beg of you to cultivate a sense of humor. Then you'll be able to laugh at yourself, and so make others laugh at you. Now, state your business, for I see there's to be no more sleep for me this day.
Tis of Lord Berkeley that I would speak, sir.
Oh, well, I've decided to make him Deputy of Ireland, if we can find no better. What think you?
If you seek to rid yourself of his presence at court, then the plan is a good one, sire.
I'll do anything short of committing a crime to rid myself of the insufferable puppy. Faith, he plagues me beyond endurance.
Then Berkeley is as good as on his way to Ireland, sire.
Ah, then 'tis settled. Now, there's the question of naming a secretary for the Scots kingdom.
Truly, sire, you have so many things to think of, I wonder that you sleep at all.
Yes, and my ministers do their utmost to rob me of what little sleep I do get. Now, there's the matter of the Dutch hostilities.
Sire, you do not hold me responsible.
No, but it galls me to think that De Ruyter was able to sail up the Thames and burn several ships at Chatham right under our very noses. Where were my soldiers? What were the guards doing?
Perhaps Shaftesbury could tell you, sir.
Shaftesbury? Hmm. Yeah, you hate him, don't you?
I hate all men who pit themselves against the Holy Roman Church.
Hush, you fool! It is your open profession of Catholicism which has made you so unpopular. Especially as your daughter Anne is married to my brother James, the heir apparent to the throne. Oh, but have done with affairs of state. It isn't decent for a man to talk before he's barbered and dressed. Summon Killigrew to attend me.
As you wish, sire. Summon His Majesty's barber at once.
You know, this fellow Killigrew is decidedly clever. Here is a book of his plays.
Sent for me, sire?
Ah, Killigrew, yes. Shave me and comb me. I'll sit by the window. I was just remarking about your plays, Killigrew. You know, you're an awful liar. What account will you give on the day of judgment of all the idle words in this book of yours?
Well, sir, I shall give a better account of all the idle words in that book than your Majesty shall do of all your idle promises and more idle patents which have undone many, but my idle words have undone no person.
You like not your king, it seems.
Sir, there is a good, honest, able man that I could name, that if your Majesty would employ him and command him to see all things well executed, all things would soon be mended.
Oh, and his name?
Charles Stuart, who now wastes his time in profligate idleness.
Strong words, good Killigrew. But I'll not hold them against you, for you're one of the few whom I trust.
I think none of your Majesty's officers is trusted more than I.
Oh, how so?
Holding the razor as I do, why, your faith, I could cut your throat when I like your Majesty.
Archfish, the very thought is treason. Get thee gone, Killigrew, you grinning devil. You shall shave me no more. Thank you.
were merry times indeed. But the reign of Charles II was soon to end, and with it ended the most profligate and licentious reign in English history. It is now Friday, the 6th of February, 1685. Charles is dying. He has just received the communion from a priest who had been brought secretly to his bedside.
Good Father Huddleston, you once saved my life after the Battle of Worcester. Now you've come to save myself. It is a great comfort to me to know that I am to die in the Catholic faith.
Be at peace, my son. Thy sins are forgiven thee.
Thank you, good father.
The Queen has sent to say she is too prostrated to attend you. She begs you will pardon her.
Alas, poor woman. She to beg my pardon. I beg hers with all my heart. Take back that answer to her, father.
Is there anything else I can do for you, my son?
Yes. Yes, father. With my last breath, I beg you not to let poor Nellie starve.